The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gotham Undercover number 59. I'm Karen, the Scarlet Cougar.
And I'm Jeff, X-Force 11.
And welcome to Gotham Undercover. We're part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. Find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or the show's Facebook page by searching for Gotham Undercover. So excited about today's podcast. So many things to talk about.
That's right. Lots of good stuff to talk about. So, man, the title is The Gentle Art of Making Enemies.
Right? Quite the dichotomy.
Yeah, definitely. And so, yeah, it was written by Seth Boston, who's done 12 episodes of Gotham, mostly the second half of last season.
Okay.
He was like the assistant writer there.
All right.
And then he's also done work, surprise, surprise, on The Mentalist.
Odd that.
Yeah.
And so he worked on phasing out fish. Is that is that his claim to fame? He helped phase out fish? Yeah, okay.
And then it was directed by Louis Malito, I think is how you say it. He's done work on The Exorcist, Lucifer, and CSI.
Awesome. The Exorcist TV show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And Lucifer, so yay. Lucifer is very well directed. So I'm very happy about that.
Cool.
And in this week's episode, we have a special contest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to plug it here. So you have to listen to this episode for more info on the contest. It will be coming later in this episode of the podcast. So listen with your ear holes.
That's right.
All right. So let's talk about the episode. Let's give our ratings.
Mm-hmm. I gave it 9.5 Bruce Begins.
Very nice. I see what you did there, movie. And I gave it the exact same rating because this was an amazing episode. I gave it 9.5 Puddles of Mud. Gross. Mm-hmm. It was pretty gross. Well, I was going to say Chum in the Water, but that was even grosser. So
yeah,
I decided to sway away from there. And I have some discussion titles.
Mm-hmm.
There were really only two storylines, but then there was a little tiny bit thrown in at the end there, mm-hmm. near the end. So I chose that as our C story. A story, no, Ms. Chimera, I expect you to die, is my A story. And that's, of course, Oswald and Ed, etc., with a few little extraneous people thrown in.
Mm-hmm.
B story is, Moose out front should have told you. Which is a line from National Lampoon's Vacation. And it is said out in front of Wally World when they arrive to find that the gates are closed for them. And Wally World, as you know, is an amusement park, which they open just for them. And John Candy and the family end up riding all the rides alone and that sort of thing. So I use that, of course, to tease Jerome's little amusement park.
Mm-hmm.
And then C story, let me be Frank. And that is about Frank, who shows up to talk to James, his nephew, near the end of the episode.
Definitely.
So those are my titles. And I actually liked these. I thought they were pretty good. I came up with them very easily this week. And that's a good sign for me that it was an episode that I got, you know, that I didn't have to search for the storyline titles.
Right, definitely.
So which do you want to talk about first, Oswald, or do you want to talk about the Joker first? Which one?
Let's talk about Oswald and get him out of the way, because that storyline was nice, but the Joker storyline was really primary agent.
Right. And so, let's just drop in here that, let me be frank, really, that's all that is. Mm-hmm. Is Frank is James's uncle. He shows up and he wants to talk to James. And we see him earlier in the episode. He is talking with Catherine from the Court of mm-hmm. Owls, staring out the window. And they also talk to Five.
Mm-hmm.
And they are making plans to maybe change him out with Bruce.
Yes. So I had a little speculation on that storyline. We know that Jim's dad was supposedly killed, whether he really was or not. Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Right.
But I'm wondering, did the Court of Owls make his dad an offer and he refused and that's why he's dead?
Mm-hmm.
Or was the death a cover-up so that he could be out of the limelight and do some other stuff? You know, it just has me asking questions.
Yeah, me too.
Of Jim's dad's involvement, and are they going to put a hit out on Jim if he refuses to help Frank?
So right. That's,
it just leaves you with more questions for the latter part of the series.
Agreed.
Here,
so. Mm-hmm. And obviously they want to recruit him. I mean, that's why he went over there. And I'm assuming now he was the guy in the chair.
It looks like it,
right,
yes.
Right, the present day guy. Now, that's not saying that his father's not still alive. He could definitely still be alive, because why would they just drop him into an episode if there wasn't going to be something else about him?
Right.
Now, whether it's just this connection with Frank or whether he went into hiding, we don't know. There will definitely be some mentions of him. And it really intrigues me, this thing with Five as well. I'm sorry to derail, but I wanted to get this little part out of the way real quick.
That's fine. And yet, Five is very interesting, because Catherine says that they have gotten rid of his scars. He's anxious to help mm-hmm. in this plan to make Gotham better. They've talked about in their scenes that they almost had to step in to keep things from going too far in Gotham.
Right.
And Frank was like, let the GCPD handle it.
Right.
It'll be okay.
Well,
and so
is that when they were looking out over the city and
right.
there were explosions? Mm-hmm. Now, I got you a screenshot from that, and I deliberately chose one where there was an explosion happening on the
mm-hmm.
window.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that, because they were literally looking out over the city in flames, talking about whether they should intervene or not, as calmly as calm could be. just knowing that they could step in at any time, but they weren't going to. They were going to let other people handle it for them. They're not much for dirty work.
Right. I really hope that the episodes that we don't know the titles are of kind of delve into their plan and what they're going to do.
So I'm assuming that's what we're going to get, because they are this last episode here before we head into this break. They had, I mean, right at the end, it was like all Court of Owls. Mm-hmm. And also, I want to mention, because we probably won't discuss it during that storyline, that the owl is now broken, that glass owl.
Yeah, that was a real surprise.
It was for me, too. Now, maybe there was something in the owl that was making it refract, like a chip mm-hmm. or something. Who knows? Or maybe we'll never get to see the map or whatever that was on it. But that's now broken and many pieces. That was something precious to the Court of Owls as well. So it looks like those little pieces that they threw into this episode are what's going to be built upon mm-hmm. in the next stretch after it comes back. But it seemed to like be morphing into this Court of Owls thing. Even though there wasn't a lot of it in this one, it was like dropped in here to say, this is what we're going to build on.
Okay. So here's the interesting thing. They have Ep Guides has updated their titles.
Mm.
And the ones we are missing were 17, 18, and 19. And 17 is The Outsiders. There's a Batman tie in there. Meant to Be. And Scarred Absence. So those are the three titles. So now we know all of the titles now. So it's going to be interesting.
Interesting. The Outsiders.
Still mysterious, but yeah.
Still really mysterious. Why were they hiding those from us?
Like I said, who knows? It may tie in. It may not. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. Thanks for the breaking bulletin.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So I'm excited to see that. And also, you know, we know that 5 is most likely going to become a Talon at some point. But right now it looks like they're grooming him to maybe do some undercover work. So that seemed to be part of that whole Let Me Be Frank storyline. And then Frank goes to talk. He and Catherine have a chat, and it looked like maybe he was saying, I'm going to go talk to my nephew and we'll see if we can get him in on these things. And then he went to talk to James, who happens to be his nephew. So that seems to be that little... they threw that line out into the water. And that's where we were on that. I didn't miss anything, right?
No.
So the broken owl, Frank visiting James, and then 5 being prepared by Catherine for whatever they have in store for him.
Right.
And he looked pretty healthy and ready to go. He's been training. And again, we were talking about that parallel training, which means he's probably... had his training, or at least some of it.
Yeah, I would say he's had some of it. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Definitely. Very much so. We'll see. And I can't wait, really. I have been excited about the Court of Owls stuff for this whole season, because that's one of the really mysterious, murky shadow groups in Batman that has always fascinated me, because they're like the elite, the powerful elite, like an Illuminati sort of organization that always is underneath everything. And that sort of thing really, really intrigues me.
Yeah, most definitely.
So I really can't wait to see where they go with that, because they can take that a lot of different ways. I mean, supervillains are wonderful. Don't get me wrong. I love my supervillains, but they're way on the surface. I mean, you can see them coming a mile away. But when it comes to a shadowy organization, that's where you get the twists and turns. And I like that. So,
yeah.
Okay. Now that we've talked that to death more than we should have, let's talk about Oswald. No, Mr. Mayor, I expect you to die.
Man. So, yeah, Oswald's looking for Ed, and he's got two of his guys with him, and they come to the location, and...
they find him.
They find him, and Ed just... You got anybody else with you? No.
Nope. Blam. Blam. Yep. Ed doesn't need those two guys. Oswald's a little taken aback. And Oswald finally gets a chance to confess his true feelings for Ed. Did I say Ed? Oswald gets to confess his true feelings for Ed. That's what I mean to say. And Ed isn't really feeling it.
No, not at all.
No.
Not at all.
And there are some words exchanged, and Oswald doesn't get it at first. He is denying that Ed could feel that malicious towards him, I guess, right? He kind of says, okay, I get it. You're mad. But, you know, I love you. We'll get past this. And Ed's not going to get past it.
No, I think... the interesting part of Oswald's character that we really got to see this episode was just how sheltered and naive he was. He states later that Ed paid attention to him and gave him attention in a way that only his mother had in the past. And so you see, like we've talked about this season, that he is not knowing where to go. He's, okay, I'm getting this attention, and I've only got that from somebody I loved before, so I'm going to walk that out. I'm going to think that it's love. And so we really get to see him kind of grow up in this episode to really realize what real love is, because Ed talks about that real love makes sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that start to dawn in this scene a little bit, and then we get to see it fuller at the end where he's going to stand up for Ed and not give him over. But he's still not fully getting it, but it steps along the path. But we really get to see his growth, and out of that kind of naivete view of what love really is and attention really is.
Right.
Because he's not used to people doing that without an ulterior motive. And I think he kind of saw that in Ed, but Ed's not having it because Oswald had the love of his life killed.
Right.
And he was ready. We saw he was ready to make that move to move past with Isabella, the things of the past, and go on in that relationship with her. And he wants and has that plan just to make Oswald suffer.
Yeah.
And nothing's going to get in his way.
No, no, he's past that point. There's no forgiving at this point for him.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed's a grown up when it comes to that sort of thing. And Oswald
right.
is stunted.
Mm-hmm.
His conceptions of relationships are completely different from Ed's. Ed understands he's twisted. I'll give him that, but he understands the concept of love, of unselfish love. Oswald doesn't. Every relationship he's ever had has been one of just, you know, taking. So using, I guess, would be the right word.
Exactly.
Except his mother, who just completely doted on him, and he used her.
Mm-hmm.
For love. So he has a completely skewed view on it. And when he applies that to Ed, all he can see is if he doesn't get rid of obstacles, then he can't be that for Ed.
Right.
And so that's what happened. And Ed, of course, never saw it like that. Even if everything had been taken out of the way naturally, Ed wouldn't have felt that way.
No.
So no. Oswald never would have gotten this, I don't
Mm-mm.
think. And in this episode, I don't think he got it even right at that last minute. Right? I mean, there was no dawn on his face, only the very, very horrific dawn of, wow, you are really going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But no really acceptance of what I did was the wrong thing. I don't think he ever really got that.
No, I don't think so either. I think he is just, I don't know. Like you said, he is stunted, and I don't know what it's going to take to get past that. And I don't know if he ever will really and truly, but yeah, it was, I'm following these steps, so you've got to – I follow these steps, so you've got to let me go. And then he gets to the bargaining at the end to really say, I'm the one that really made you. He's trying to pull Fish's speech to him earlier in the
right.
season on Ed. I'm the one that made you. I'm the one that, you know, I can see stuff in you. I can bring – and it's just – it's not going to make a difference
no.
at all.
And I think Ed may see a little bit of that,
mm-hmm.
but it's still not nearly enough. Ed sees that maybe he was spurred on by Oswald, but he ultimately made all the steps himself. And I see that, you know, when I look at the character on the screen,
mm-hmm.
Oswald definitely did take him in, and, you know, when Ed healed him out in the woods. Oswald helped him, you know, shored him up when Ed was going a little cuckoo. And they helped each other.
Right.
But I think Ed would have found his way on his own. You know, maybe he wouldn't be exactly the same, but he'd still be essentially balanced as a criminal balanced. I mean, the way he is. But now he has connections and things like that that he didn't have otherwise. So there are some selling points, as you know, that he got from Oswald, definitely. However... Oswald, his bad side outweighed the good side, definitely.
Yeah.
And just the whole interchange between them was just, I felt horrible for Oswald, really horrible, because it was unwitting what he did. You know, he really didn't understand what he did. Now, it's awful. I mean, he shouldn't get off, but no. But Ed shouldn't be judge, jury, and executioner either. So you know what do you want to happen in this? You know, you want Ed to get his justice, and I feel like, well, yeah, sure, okay.
Well, and I think that it's going to really make him think. He has committed murder in the past. He's done these things. He's gone this far. But I really think that this betrayal and this breakdown of this relationship is really going to be the catalyst that we kind of got to see in the promo, which is in the blog post. But what is going to really push him over the edge, per se, to become the Riddler, he's going to think about what was said and what was done and how things could change and where these chain of actions have led him mentally and emotionally. And I think it's going to be an impetus where he's going to realize after the fact that there was probably a better way to do this. And, you know, it was his vengeance coming out. And so that may change him and grow him into the Riddler. So I'm anxious to see if some of that gets played out on the screen or if we're going to be left to kind of infer that when we come back and get to see more of the progression towards the Riddler.
Right. Now, I'm going to infer it anyway because that's how the Riddler gets made piece by piece, definitely. He is a puzzle, literally and figuratively. I mean, that's... That's how he is built, and that's just him. And so everything that happens to him is what goes into creating him.
Right.
So this is only going to build onto that, is that he has to have gone through this hatred, going from having this best friend that has stood by him through thick and thin, kill his true love or his second true love, as it were. And of course, he has to mirror that to the fact that he killed his true love as well. I mean, Ed killed his own true love. So that's a little bit of hating himself. You know, he's looking in the mirror at the same time. So there's that. And, you know, taking out this vengeance on Oswald and again, a little bit of that is it's a catharsis for, you know, taking out some of that self-hatred for killing Kristen as well. So, you know, because they look the same. Isabella kind of acted like Kristen, you know, as a tribute. So there has to be a little bit of that in his head.
Yeah.
So that has to screw with you a little bit, right? So, yeah. And of course, at the end of the episode, we get a bit of a mirror back to the first season.
Such a mirror. I'm like, Penguin and the docks just don't go well together.
No,
he's just got bad luck.
No, Oswald, don't go down to the docks with someone who has a gun.
No.
Just don't. this is bad news for you because you're going to get shot and you're going to get pushed into the water. But is it wrong that I just don't worry about him? He's going to get out of that water, right?
Yeah, it's just, in a way, I like the mirror of how it was different from the beginning of the series. But in the another part of me is still like, is this really getting tropey now?
Right.
It's like, okay, we get it. He has to go into the water to come out and become more and different. And so I'm like, okay, you know, I'm a little on the fence that way. But yeah, we'll see how he comes back right. This time.
He has to be reborn again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Exactly. But yeah, Ed thinks he's killed him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Has he died? Dun, dun, dun. You know, are we going to know yet? I don't know. When we come back, we'll find out. I have a sneaky suspicion he will still be alive when we come back. Yeah.
I really liked this storyline as far as Babs, Tabs, Butch.
Now, was that a realization or what when he said, I see you're working together?
Yeah, and I love the little character insights because you have Butch and Tabs kind of going back and forth at each other at the mayoral mansion. and Butch knocks out Penguin and Tabs like, you know, you're going to have to carry him now.
Right.
And he's like, don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, then they're one-upping each other of getting the information out of him at the Sirens Club. But I like those little insights into the character and those things playing out. And I really liked Barbara just being on top of things and kind of laying things out and leading Oswald on a little bit of letting him speak out things and what he thinks the plan is and how he can get out of it. And just her comments about, you know, Penguin's like, I hope you enjoy your seat at the table. And she's like, well, it's filled with old dead white guys, but
right.
You know, just her personality and those little bits and pieces that while this storyline wasn't like the main storyline, it's those little pieces that give you insight that make it fun and justify it being there. But yeah, I really enjoyed those three in this episode and the little fun that they gave in there.
Yeah, a little lightness to that kind of heavy storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then, in the water he went, and we shall see to which he returns. as he will, and Ed, of course, will be angry.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see where that goes, too, because that means Ed will be frustrated that his vengeance did not end.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, there's another puzzle piece that he's going to feel like his work is unfinished.
Mm-hmm.
So that vendetta will be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, on to the really great storyline in this episode. The 9.5 storyline in this episode. And this is Jerome and Bruce. Now, in the last episode, Jerome was with Lee, and he mentioned that he remembered one of the last things he did was he was trying to kill Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Lee, come on. Tell someone that's what he said.
I mean, I understand, and I was frustrated because we see the GCPD is in chaos. There, it's just people, the Cult of Joker members are all over the place. It's, you've got Molotov cocktails coming through the windows. It's nuts. And they're, Jim and Harvey are just trying to manage the chaos, trying to get some type of handle on it. And Jim's like, we've got to cut off the head. We've got to stop it that way. And they're trying to figure out how to do that. Okay, Jerome, how do we find Jerome? And then Jim remembers, oh, he talked to Lee.
Right.
And Lee's patching up people. And she's obviously got this antagonistic relationship towards Jim still. And granted, you know, she's still angry at him. But I'm sorry. She's smart. It's like, okay, this is all caused by Jerome.
Mm-hmm.
What is Jerome? What was he talking about? Okay, Bruce. And so it's like, oh, you finally see that look on her face when Jim is asking her those questions. And you're like, now you're thinking about
right.
it? Now?
Right. Ugh. Maybe you should have thought about it when you thought maybe they would want to go track him down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
You're only mad at one cop.
Right. And the city's in chaos because of one person. You mm-hmm. got some insight, share it.
Right.
You know?
Right. And then take time out to help people, because you're going to get way more people coming in to help if you don't nip it in the bud right now.
Right. Exactly.
So if you don't want to work your butt off for the next few days, maybe think about what Jerome was saying to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was really vindictive of her, I thought.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed in that character because of that, you know, her character and what's going on there. But once again, so she says, okay, Bruce. Jim immediately recognizes the issue, says, tells her to call the manor, let him know he's on the way. And we jump immediately over there. And Alfred and Bruce are getting candles. They're talking about an emergency generator. The phone's ringing, but it's way too late.
Right.
Because Jerome's there and he's got his henchmen and stylish. He's hearkening back. You know, Bruce was on his mind. He talks about that killing Bruce is rattling around in his mind. And he's going back to where he was. So he's got this designer straight jacket outfit mm-hmm. he's wearing. It's like if, I don't know, a famous Parisian fashion designer designed stuff for Arkham. That's right. What he would be wearing. And he comes in. And I love, we get so much progression of Bruce this week. We really get to see what these seasons so far have made him to be and how much it's gone into his thinking. And he's thinking on his feet, okay, let's move out. Okay, you are a showman. Shouldn't you really get rid of me in a public space so right. other people can see? You know, he's thinking about getting to a place that's easier accessible to the GCPD, things like that. He's thinking on his feet. And all during this episode, we really got to see. And that's why I said Bruce Begins, because he's making these solid steps towards who he needs to be Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to see this real progression. And so I was just so happy with just the little interchange there with Alfred of take care of yourself. You know, your training. So the Jerome's character is exciting of how well he plays this Joker character. And we talked about that last week, but what really excited me is, okay, you, for character movement, a lot of the time it takes a opposition to bring progress. And so we see this major enemy of Batman coming in and forcing Bruce to apply the things he's learned and start to make those choices that are going to form him to be Batman. And that's why I really graded this episode up, not just because of the acting, but because of the story movement and the character movement forward in this storyline. It was just so good.
Agreed. You could see him becoming more like the Bruce Wayne we know in this episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could literally see him taking those steps in this episode. Mm-hmm. From the point where Alfred hears the thugs coming in, okay? He hears them and he stops Bruce. He puts his finger up to his mouth and he's mm-hmm. the one that reacts first.
Right.
But then when everything hits the fan there, Bruce mm-hmm. is the one that takes over.
Right.
Bruce, you know, kind of tries to take Jerome and calm him down. And Alfred is on the floor just, you know, waiting it out. He's alert.
Yeah.
He's been hit, but you know, he's still aware of what's going on, but he's letting Bruce kind of take the lead at this point. Mm-hmm. And you could see him talking to Jerome and he's saying, you know, yeah, you were a showman. It'd be such a shame to kill me in private. And you know that Jerome gets it. He knows mm-hmm. why Bruce is doing it, but he also can see that logic in it and that just that need. He wants to do it in public. Mm-hmm. You know, once he hears that idea, it's just a worm in his brain that he can't get out. And he's like, you know what? Oh, I know it's a trap, but I have to do it now. So, you know, it's just perfect the way he does it. And Bruce knows this as well. You know, he's one of those defining characteristics of Bruce Wayne is that he's just this uber genius. And it's nothing that he flaunts, but it's just a part of him mm-hmm. that, you know, he had these two really intellectual parents and they both passed down that brilliance to him. Mm-hmm. And he thinks so quickly on his feet. And this was shown here where he just totally, you know, pitches this idea to Jerome that he knows he's not going to be able to turn down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fantastic. And of course, Jerome, where is he going to go?
Yeah.
He's going to go to the... Yes.
He's going to go to the big top.
That's right. The music that plays in my boy cat's head all the time. That is the music that plays in my boy cat's head. I can see it as he walks around the house. Yeah. Do, what am I going to do next? Yeah, so they go there, and lots of weird things are happening. He paints his face like a clown, and he's doing all these things with the staples in his face. And again, you see these changes just coming gradually to Bruce, where he's stapling. Mm-hmm. You know, Bruce is asking, "Does it hurt when he staples his face?" And he's like, "Meh." And then he comes over and he staples Bruce's arm, and Bruce mm-hmm. doesn't even flinch for the first two.
Yeah.
And then he can't take the third one. Mm-hmm. And that is where we're seeing him grow into Bruce. Mm-hmm. He's not there yet, but man, he is really close, you know?
Yeah. I think you've got this character and he's adding tools and skills to his toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
To really make him fleshed out and the real menace to crime in Gotham. But he's got that character there and it's growing. And he's been this person who's concerned about justice and wants – he says – Jerome is talking about that the people don't want a plan. Bruce is keeping him talking and asking questions, trying to learn motivations and get in this guy's head so he can either delay him or just know him. And Jerome says these people don't want a plan. They just basically want to be set free for somebody to tell them, okay, do whatever you want, off whoever you want. And Bruce says, there are still good people in Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerome says, where? Hiding under their beds behind locked doors. And so you see this thing click in him to say, somebody has to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has to stand up for those people who are good, who can't stand up to something like this. So you see that mental progress in his mind, and he's doing his best to try to keep the guy from getting dropped into the dunk tank of piranhas.
Piranhas, yeah.
And Jerome's like, you cheated, you know, hit the thing, drops the guy in there. But like I said, the writing and the acting, both playing together.
Those two, man.
That is not said, but is mentally, you see it on the actors' faces when they're walking through things, where they're considering things and different lines like that. It is just so strong. And that's what's, you know, I don't know if it's Joker that says this, or, but I know that there's the trope that the hero steps up because of the villain.
Right.
To that, you would be nothing without me.
Mm-hmm.
And you really see that walked out between these two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the start, but you really see, okay, I've got to take it to the next level. And it was just so good. So,
yeah,
man, Jerome.
Well, Jerome says, he says in that interchange, there are no heroes in Gotham. And right. It's almost like you can see a light bulb go off in Bruce's head.
Mm-hmm.
Then somebody better become a hero.
Right.
Right? Don't you exactly. see that mm-hmm. almost go off in his head?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether he's thinking he wants to do it yet or not, but it's like Gotham needs one.
Yeah, I don't know that he knows that hit is his full step.
Right.
Because we'll get to the end there. But I think you see maybe he looks at it maybe how his father looked at it is, I've got to make a stand where I can make a stand.
Mm-hmm.
And things are going to push him along the way to realize that I've got to do this for myself. But I think he knows enough about his father's character to say, my father was doing this in his way, and I've got to do it in my way. My name gives me responsibility to do this for Gotham City. And I've been put this has been put in front of me. So I've got to do my part to make sure that, you know, the heroes stand up, that these people get protected. Now,
right.
Like I said, it's going to take a while for that to actually him to actually take that step. But yes, seeing that kind of light go off in his face was just great.
Yeah, it was. I really could see that when they were mm-hmm. they were right up close to each other too, like right in each other's faces when he said it. And mm-hmm. so seeing that recognition on his face was evident.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerome had no idea what he had done in that moment, that he set this flame off inside Bruce to hold people accountable, whether it was by his hand himself or whether it was by making it possible for other people to do heroic things.
Right. And that's the interesting thing, because Jerome's whole point of view was setting these people free to act on their baser instincts and to do those things which society, quote unquote, holds them back from doing. But that also brings to bear heroes. They're mm-hmm. going to step up. And that's where he just doesn't realize that there can be those people who are good, who are going to stand up, who are strong, that their instinct isn't that. And that catches him off guard, especially with with Bruce. So it's just so cool to see.
I agree. And we also get to see, and I wasn't expecting this at all in this episode until it happened. We also get to see the mirroring of the two sides of the same coin thing in this episode, which is so evident between Bruce and the Joker later on. But when they were in the mirror room and he's holding that shard up and he looks down at Jerome and he's thinking, you know, he looks in the mirror at himself and he sees the makeup on his face. Wow. That is literally mirroring, seeing how close to him am I becoming?
Right.
And that is just, that carries through the Batman comics constantly, is how he wants to keep himself in check. This is his whole code, is that's how he holds himself accountable, how he doesn't cross the line over from vigilante into criminal.
Yeah, I absolutely loved the conversation at the end and the dynamic change that we've seen between Alfred and Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
We see Alfred starting out as a protector and being there to somebody who is training. And you see Alfred says, listen, we don't know what's next, but, you know, you've got to have a code. You've got to have rules. And just to see him offering that advice to Bruce and Bruce taking it in to say, yes, I need to think about my rules and my code of conduct before things happen so that I am set to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because his rules are going to be different than somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got to make his own that are going to work for him. And just to see that relationship with Alfred, where Alfred is offering that advice and helping him become the man he needs to be, which he gave that line earlier in the season. It's, you know, he said, you know, I'm not here to protect him. I'm here to help him become the man he needs to be. And just to see that formation of that rule set and just the beautiful cinematography. It's the image in one of the images there in the blog post of, you see Bruce sitting there. Alfred's already left. Bruce is sitting there. You see the sun coming through the glass behind him. He's sitting there considering, starting to make these mental rules and checklists, thinking about things. And you're just fist pumping because of how good it is and how right it feels. And it's just so amazing to see that character development.
It is. It is. And you see it twice in this episode. Once where he is not consciously forming them, where he looks down at himself in the mirror and at Jerome underneath him, and he realizes he can't be like this.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't do this. This is not me. I don't want to devolve into what this person is. And he just, you know, he sinks and he says, I'm not going to kill him. This, I just can't do this. And, you know, that is such a prevalent theme between him and the Joker, especially, that he and the Joker are just so close in temperament, but so different. You know, they are so focused on this, you know, the single-mindedness on their goal. You know, Joker wants to free people and let them run wild, let them have their own way, let them do whatever they want. And really, Batman's whole goal is to do the same thing, but in the other direction. Empower people to become good, to do something, to kind of be a hero in their own world. And that's his whole thing, to set that example. And So they're like two sides of the same coin. And that's what I always say, is that's why Joker is the perfect villain for him.
Right.
And that's kind of why he can never kill him, is that, well, number one, he says he won't kill, although he has mm-hmm. many times in the comics before the gun thing. I mean, way back in the early mm-hmm. days, he killed many people, but he doesn't kill anymore. So, you know, this is how they justify it now. But he can't kill him because there's a part of him that just realizes that without Joker, there would be no Batman. You know what I mean? I mean, Batman became Batman because of the Joker. And that, it's so evident in this episode. They really did a great job with that theme mm-hmm. in this episode. And even after Jerome comes out of the madhouse with that same shard of glass, which again, such imagery. Mm-hmm. Again, with the same side, the two sides of the same coin. He's going to kill Bruce with that same shard because he doesn't have those same morals.
Exactly.
And James is there, Commissioner Gordon, as it were, he's there to be the conscience that, you know, the part of Batman that the Batman can't be. Mm-hmm. And he's going to stop Jerome from killing Bruce when Bruce can't take that extra step.
Right.
And boy, that was gross.
Oh, yeah. I mean, watching it the first time and watching this episode, it was very hard to take notes to try to keep up. Mm-hmm. And so watching the second time, I really was looking forward to watching it the second time just to watch it without taking notes. But oh, how.
Right?
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Watching that face loosen over like five or six punches.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. It gave me the oogs.
Yeah, definitely.
Is all I can say, because it got looser and looser until that last punch. When it just went flop into the water like a pancake. And he's just laying there, passed out, mostly probably because of the pain, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and probably.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was just gross. And everyone is just stunned into silence, probably like we were. Mm-hmm. And he's not dead, obviously.
No. So Harvey said that they're going to reattach the face
again.
And send him to Arkham.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And again, he'll have those scars.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're perfect. They're perfect Joker scars.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like you said at the end, I love that picture. I tried to get the best picture of that scene that I could. It's such a great scene
mm-hmm.
where he talks to Alfred, and Alfred is 100% behind him in setting these morals for himself. Right. He already knows that Bruce has this set of morals. He just wants Bruce to solidify them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Don't you think that's kind of the deal?
Yeah. It's one of those things where you're looking at a sword that is formed, but it's not yet sharpened and polished yet.
Yeah.
And so you're looking at that, it's in its raw state and it's ready to be. And it's, so think about it. You've got, this is the part where you've got to switch from really using the hammer to using finesse.
Right.
And so that's the mental. Okay. You've got this steel within you, and now you've got to hone it and sharpen it and think about things
right
mentally and be prepared. And so,
some
yeah.
of that is polish,
mm-hmm.
which is the writing down or the mm-hmm. taking mental notes of whatever your code's going to be.
Right.
And some of it is literally taking something that's rough and sharpening the edge, which would be more training.
Right,
specializing that training. As we know, he's a martial artist. So, you know, he's been boxing, but, you know, has he been training in other methods?
I don't think so yet.
Yeah.
But you really, the one thing that I really impressed me, we got to see a little bit with him blocking Selena last week, but his fighting skills.
Yeah, really much better.
Fighting Jerome. And we got to see lock picking skills where he basically takes the staples out and uses them as a lock pick to get out of the locks.
That was great.
So you're seeing that training come into effect.
He learned that from Selena, I'm guessing.
Yeah. I think he learned that on his time on the streets with Selena.
So, and again, it's him picking up pieces from every place that he goes.
Right.
He's out on the streets with Selena, so he learns things there and he stores them away. He's learning to fight. He has this code and he's going to incorporate that into the package that will become Batman. And I think he's really going to decide what type of person he wants to be from this experience. This is really going to clarify for him, especially that statement, there is no hero in Gotham. And that statement is really going to stick with him, I think.
Where
right now it's kind of nebulous. It's like, yeah, there's no hero in Gotham. And right now he may be down about it. Like he was right. There is no hero in Gotham. I don't know that he's thinking, I'm going to step up and do it like we talked about. Maybe he's going to go talk to James about it. He's going to talk to Alfred. Who knows? And I'm not saying he's going to tell them they have to be it. But, you know, he's going to maybe say, I'm, you know, what is going on in our town? And I'm not saying it's going to happen on the screen either. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's going to want to talk about why is Gotham so bad? And it's going to come to him over time. Maybe I have to start with me. Maybe it has to start with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's going to be that gradual kind of, I have these abilities. I have money. I have time, I could do this, and and that's going to start this journey to Batman, I think.
I agree. I think he is going to empower as much as he can the heroes that he sees around him and do that as much as he can. And then he's going to realize, okay, there's a gap here that only I can feel.
Right. And maybe he'll get more frustrated and see that no one's doing anything and he'll just be, okay, if no one's going to do it, I'll do it. Right? I mean, I think it might be a combination of a lot of different things. We never really saw that anywhere. We saw a little bit of it in what, Batman Begins, where he goes off to Sri Lanka or wherever, but we didn't see the main part of what spurs him on to do that. But here I feel like we see that seed being planted with that one sentence, and it's so brilliant the way they did it. And that is why I gave this such a high rating, because here is where we see Batman being made in this episode. And it is so fantastic, and it gave me chills.
Definitely.
As a Batman fan, I was like, it's Batman being made. And this is why I loved seeing Jerome come back, because no one else could do this.
Yeah.
But Joker. Joker had to be the one to do this, right? I mean,
I agree. And I think we've talked about him, the creators bringing that character along. And I can see their reasoning of not bringing him fully around until this point.
Me
because
too.
It's when you bring about the Joker to this point, you start down a road and you've got to be ready to walk it out or people are going to get really frustrated. So I understand while they have put off bringing that character really to the forefront over the last couple of seasons, because we don't want that to happen too soon, because we want to have a slower pace and a development and character driven. And it feels like once you bring that in, you've got to do it in the right way, or you feel like you have to rush things to make it work and to make it, you know, you've introduced this ticking time bomb, so you've got to get ahead of it. So I'm grateful that they have been given the seasons that they have by Fox and that they had done things the way they did. And I can understand their reasoning and their ability to say, yes, we've got this actor and he can bring what we need to the character. And now we can do it in a way that we don't feel like we're pushing this kid too far, too fast, the story of Bruce Wayne too far, too fast, and to make the season feel not stagnant or not being rushed too much. And then we've got to pull back and we're rut, you know. So I appreciate the way that they're doing it.
Agreed. I agree 100%. He needed to go through some stuff before he could be challenged like this, mm-hmm. Bruce, the Bruce character.
Right.
And I think the city also needed to go through some stuff before Jerome could show up and work them into mm-hmm. this fervor. And I like that they introduced Jerome early and then they tore him down and made him crazier, because mm-hmm. the Joker is crazier than Jerome was to begin with. and really, I think he's only going to get crazier from here. You know, he's he's insane. And I think, what's his first name? His last name's Moynihan, right?
Cameron.
Cameron, is that his name? Cameron Moynihan?
I think so.
The actor who plays Jerome. He has given a couple interviews, a lot of interviews lately. Wow. And he says that his inspiration for the Joker comes from one character. And oddly enough, it is the animated character of the Joker, the Mark Hamill one, which is pretty much what you and I had said last week, that he seems to be
quite a few, Chris and us as well. Yeah, definitely.
That we said he seems very much like that Joker. And he says mm-hmm. that's the one he likes the most out of all of them. He seems the most fun out of all of them, but also very sinister. And he mm-hmm. wanted to embody that kind of Joker. Right. He doesn't want to be all the way dark, and he doesn't want to be super over the top campy. He really liked that sort of, you know, I can be either way. I can be,
that
almost
balance.
Non-threatening sometimes. And I can also be really, really dark sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think he's really bringing a very high level of maturity to that character.
Most definitely.
So, I was very impressed with the interviews I read with him.
Cool.
And of course, you know, you have to, in order to have a character, an actor with that quality playing the Joker, you have to play up against an actor with the same level. And David Mazouza, as we have said for the whole time we've been doing this podcast, in this episode, they really bring it, both of them.
Yeah.
And I am impressed every week by them. They are acting well above their years.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So crazy mm-hmm. good. This was a crazy good episode. they better bring it for the rest of the season, is all I'm saying. I expect really good stuff from here on out.
Definitely.
Although, you know, if they're less than a 9.5, I'm okay, because this one was just so good. I'm right. It was such a great episode.
Uh-huh.
All right. We have some feedback from last week that we're going to read. Just like on Remaking History, sometimes we get feedback from last week.
I resemble that remark.
Yeah, we read one. We played yours, didn't we? Because you got it in right at the deadline. So this is from Chris, and he writes, "Hi, Jeff and Karen." Hi, Chris.
Hey.
When Jerome had his face cut off, four things came to mind. One, the movie Face Off. Yeah, me too. Two, Hannibal Lecter's method of escape in Silence of the Lambs. Yeah. And three, the Joker getting his face cut off by the doll maker in the comics. Yeah, I'm thinking that might be the inspiration for it, right?
Yeah, maybe. I believe so.
Yeah. And four, the face itself reminded me of V for Vendetta.
Definitely.
Sure, yeah. It's like a mask. And I think that was the illusion they were making, that it's a mask for him at this point. And here, back to the feedback. I agree with the point about Jerome emulating previous Jokers. I love how he does Heath Ledger's Joker in his manner of speaking, and then he throws in a line about being upstaged by Galavan, delivered in the style of Mark Hamill's animated Joker, my favorite interpretation. The bandages reminded me of Nicholson. Mirror! And I kind of want to see Jerome draw a pencil-thin mustache on his face in reference to Cesar Romero.
That would have been cool, especially with his straw hat.
It would have been fun.
But anyway.
Yeah, I know. It would have been fun. It looks to me that Barbara is going to be the catalyst to bring both the Penguin and the Riddler to the next level. Proven right. As much as I love Jerome, and he was the main reason I stuck with Gotham in season one, I think the Bruce versus Selina confrontation was my favorite part of this episode. He's talking about last week, of course. It was another instance of being able to see into the future and see Catwoman versus the big brooding Boy Scout, as Catwoman calls Batman in Arkham Knight. Great performances all around. Thanks, guys. Chris. Yeah, I agree. Last week's highlight for me was also the Selina Bruce thing. That was great.
Yeah, definitely.
Again, those two actors playing off of each other is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, guys, you have some interesting sound effect to play. I'll play this.
Phrasing?
Danger zone. Okay, there we go. All right. So, contest info, guys. I'm throwing it in right here to make sure you're listening.
That's right.
So, thanks to Polly Grice at Titan Books, we have several copies of Jason Starr's book, Gotham, Dawn of Darkness. It was just released a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
It is the official prequel to the TV show. And here's an excerpt. A break-in at Wayne Manor, the death of a masked intruder. Amid the seething crime and corruption of Gotham City, Thomas Wayne fights to protect his family and the company from forces unknown. While Detective Harvey Burke investigates the incident as a simple burglary, Wayne discovers that the threat may come from his own dark past. Peeling back layer upon layer of secrets, this is the official prequel to the hit television series.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so our contest is open to residents of the U.S., U.K., and Canada, so not just the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give you a question, and you're going to email us your answer at gotham@goldenspiralmedia.com. And the first three winners, the first three people to give us the correct answer, will receive a mass market paperback copy of Gotham Dawn of Darkness by Jason Starr. Mm. All right. So here we go. Let's see how easy or how hard this question is, shall we? We don't know because we both knew this question, but we don't know how easy it is. Bob Kane, one of the creators of Batman, had an interesting cameo in Tim Burton's original Batman. What was it?
Mm-hmm. So that is your question. Once again, you need to email us, and we will look at the first three entries that have it correct, and we'll get you your copy of the book.
Now, since it's an actual hard copy, we will need your name, address, your full address, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It'll be nice to get the email address that you want us to email you back at as well, just in case. And that's email us at gotham@goldenspiralmedia.com. So that's your answer. If you don't want to give us your address until you get a confirmation that you've given us the correct answer. That's fine. but we do need the answer to the question. The first three people that get the answer correct will get the mass market paperback copy of Gotham Dawn of Darkness.
That's right.
All right. And there will be a little bit of news about the book later in the podcast as well. So wait for that. All right. Now there's more. And we have more feedback. You want to read the next one?
Yes. This one's from Justina.
And it's so cute.
Lots of little emojis in there.
She knows I love emojis.
She says, "Good evening, Gotham. This is your eye in the sky, green butterfly. OMG, he punched his face off."
And she put a little monkey holding his face.
With his hands over the eyes.
Yep.
"Did you see his face?" Anyway, a couple more things. What's your opinion? This is an Elseworld. Does that mean they can kill people that are alive in other continuities? Are our key characters automatically safe because of other continuities?
It means everything is up for grabs, Justina.
That's right.
However, there are characters that are so popular on the show, I would say they're fairly safe. Mm-hmm. So if you're asking about Oswald, I think he's probably coming back.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I was thinking about this when I watched the penguin go into the water.
And she put a penguin and then little drops of water.
I didn't this already happen in another mm-hmm. season? I think it did. That guy is always irritating people.
Yeah, he sure is.
I'm super excited to watch the Batman films with you guys because the films were my entrance to the world. And you'll hear more about that later. Mm-hmm. She says, "This episode makes me think of the first film with the acid hanging over Penguin because that's something like the Joker faces in the original film." Yeah, mm-hmm. Being dropped in the vat there.
Yep.
"I'm glad you chose the second movie."
The little camera.
Camera, "so we can compare and contrast the Penguin's and Catwoman journey." Mm-hmm. And she says, "Dark Knight is my favorite double heart ever." "And I never saw Flashpoint Paradox, and I love the Scarlet Speedster, and I had no idea there was a Gotham connection, so I'm excited for that.
Yay.
Enjoy the break, and thanks for all the hard work. Love, Green Butterfly."
It's Butterfly.
Thank you, Justina.
Happy face with hearts. I love all the emojis.
Yeah.
And her butterfly's not green, but that's all right.
Yeah, well.
I don't think there is a green butterfly
emoji.
No,
there's not.
It's a monarch butterfly, which is just as good.
Yeah.
So I love her emojis. They're so great. When she put Elseworlds, there's a little Earth.
Yeah.
It's adorable. Yeah. There was Oswald did get shot and pushed into the water in the first season by James, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he is always irritating people. That is correct. So there's that. And thank you for all your hard work, sending in feedback and all that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what I have to say. Now we have an audio file from The Flash.
"Hey, guys. Martin The Flash here. Whoa. That's it. That's all I got for you." That three-episode story arc revolving around the Joker, oh my God, is some of the best TV I have seen in years. I mean, yeah, they had the story with Penguin and Riddler finally getting most of his revenge and, you know, shooting Penguin in the end. Like, what's going to happen there? Obviously, Penguin has to live, but I love how they showed Riddler in green finally. That was cool. And, you know, Selina dealing with her mom a little bit, that was cool. But come on, the two big stories, this, as I said, three-episode arc with Jerome being brought back to life, being a little bit more crazy, and fulfilling his Joker legacy. This kid is unbelievable. He is the perfect combination between Heath Ledger and Mark Hamill from the cartoons. And I think I said that before, but this kid deserves an Emmy nomination at the very least, because it's just phenomenal what he's doing. But I think what the real heart of that story was, for anybody who's been a fan of Batman and the Batman history and knows the long, crazy back and forth, I don't even have the words for it, but the history and the rivalry between Joker and Batman, everybody knows the struggles that has been for Bruce Wayne and for Batman or whatever, and everybody knows that the Joker just toys with him, the Joker can't survive without him. To see that all from the beginning, to see the intensity and the, oh man, I am really struggling for my words this morning, but just to see that legacy of the Joker and the Batman, to see it from the beginning and see where it all began and why they are so twisted up and tied together, not even at the hip, as the saying goes, they are twisted down to their innards. It was powerful, powerful stuff.
Yeah.
To see the beginnings of that. And then that led into Bruce Wayne becoming the Batman that we all know and love. That last sequence with him and, oh my God, now I'm totally blanking.
Alfred.
Him and Alfred. When Alfred asked him, you know, what does he need to do? And he says, I shall not kill. Say it again. I shall not kill. Like that. Oh my God, that was some powerful stuff. I don't know who the director was for these episodes, but just amazing. And the performances by these actors, I mean, that kid, he has to play Bruce Wayne and Batman 20 years from now. When he's grown up, he's got to play him, as long as he still looks the part. But he's growing into it as if this really is Bruce Wayne, and we just happen to have a camera following around. It's amazing, amazing. Anyway,
it's
some of the best TV I've seen in a long time. We have got to get a lot more people watching Gotham. Because, boy, those three episodes was worth it. That was worth getting to this point. What a way to end another hiatus. Whew. Flashes out.
Thank you, Martin. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hadn't listened to it. All I did is take out the noise, the background noise, and take out the silences. And I was like, we just said all that. I try not to listen because I don't want the audio feedback to influence my discussion.
Right.
And wow, he said pretty much exactly what we said. It was heady stuff. And I would say they're kind of tied together at their souls at this point, right? I mean, that's just as deep as it can get.
Yeah.
So crazy, crazy town. All right. We got a little bit of feedback, and I'm putting it in the feedback section, but really it's just some news from someone that we've discussed on the show before. Julius Agnier, who has done some original music based on the show. Bye. He's on SoundCloud, and we're going to put a link to his SoundCloud files on our blog post.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Julius, Julius Agnier, Agnier. You can go to SoundCloud and find him there. He has some new songs up. He's also at Julius Agnier on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
He is doing an AMA, so a live Q&A or an Ask Me Anything. And right now he has a poll up on Twitter, and he wants to know, do you want a live Q&A on Periscope or Instagram? Instagram is winning right now. So visit his Twitter profile if you're interested in asking him questions. You can vote there, and you can also get details on how to join in on the AMA. So there's that, and all of his details will be on our blog post. We featured his music before. It's really great.
Yeah, definitely.
And he's been featured other places, and he's had a lot of people voting already on his poll. And I'm sure he'll have very interesting things to talk about. So go there and visit him and vote in the poll and listen to his music.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that news. So do you want to read the new Chris feedback?
Yes, I can.
All right.
So Chris says, from last week, I mentioned Arkham Knight in passing. For those of you not familiar with the game, the setting for this episode with Gotham in total chaos is pretty much Arkham Knight, minus Batman.
Yep, pretty much.
And then he says, was I the only one who said the worst is yet to come to themselves when Ed lit the flame on the acid trap?
Yeah. Kind of, yeah.
And then if they ever decide to do an older James Bond, Sean Pertwee would be a good choice.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
That action, yeah, he's just there. I mean, I appreciate his athleticism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just his wit and just who he is as an actor. And he does a great job. And yeah, that would be fun to see a retired Bond pulled back in.
Right?
Yeah.
He's perfect for Alfred at this point because he's not the old Alfred. He's like the slightly older than middle-aged Alfred.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And it's perfect for the age that Bruce Wayne is. It's it's just an amazing choice. He's so good in this role. Mm-hmm. And the chemistry, again, with the casting. He and David Massues are so cute together in real life. When they go out to conventions and stuff, they eat together and they pal around. It's just so great to see them in real life too. So yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay, back to Chris.
The carnival may very well be the most Jokerific setting ever filmed in live action. Yeah,
agreed.
The whack of humans, the shooting galleries, and everything. Yeah, that's just right up his alley.
It is.
Says any lack of comments during the carnival should be interpreted as me alternating between sitting with my jaw hanging open in amazement and me squealing with delight doing a happy dance. Yeah, it's like it was hard to take notes because I was like,
I know, it was riveting.
Yeah, definitely. The scene in the funhouse with the mirrors was very reminiscent of the end of Enter the Dragon, featuring a completely different Bruce facing a bad guy in a hall of mirrors.
Yeah, that's true.
And how great was Jerome's fighting style?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Not quite as disciplined as Bruce's.
No, but...
yeah. Enter the Dragon, I cannot recommend that highly enough. Even if you're not into martial arts movies, it's a good movie.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. He goes on to say, the episode was good until Jerome kidnapped Bruce. At that point, they kicked in the afterburners and didn't let up until the episode ended. I rarely do this, but I'm breaking out the Spinal Tap rating and giving this an 11 out of 10 tanks of hungry piranhas.
Yeah.
This is an episode I'm likely to just sit down and watch any time over and over. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, it was one of those that I was really enjoying. And then once they got to the carnival thing, wow, it blew my mind. So, yeah, I agree with all these comments. You guys are right on board with us.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, so good. So if you want to get in your feedback, our deadline is usually Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
And you can call us at 304-837-2278 with one of those phone things.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can type in text and send us an email. You can attach an audio file, or you can use the SpeakPipe widget to speak right into your microphone and send it to us. We are on at Gotham GSM on the Twitter machine, where you can follow us and you can watch Gotham live, watch Jeff, not Gotham. Your name's not Gotham. I'm staring at your name right on my screen. You can watch Jeff live tweet every Monday, most Mondays, right?
Yeah.
And it's great because he tweets pictures and he gets liked by the cast members and stuff. It's very cool. And then you can subscribe in iTunes to any Golden Spiral Media podcast by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes.
That's right.
Let them know what exciting things are happening.
So we have some fun stuff coming. Gotham is off the air, but we're not going to be. We announced last week that we're doing 3 Gotham extra episodes, and we need your feedback. So what's going to happen is we're going to give you a deadline to watch the movies. You watch the movie, call in on the feedback line, or go to the contact information that Karen just gave you, and tell, okay, how in your mind did the characters in the movie relate to what we're seeing on the screen in the TV show Gotham? What are the similarities? What are the differences? What do you think they could maybe bring in from the movies to make it more interesting? But basically, we're looking for your thoughts on comparing and contrasting the movie and the TV series. So that's what we're looking for. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have a round table where Karen and John McGrell and myself are going to be discussing the movie and discussing these points, and we're going to bring in your feedback. So we want you to be a part there. So we're doing the first Gotham Extra is on Batman Returns. So it's going to look at Oswald Cobblepot and Selina Kyle. And we're going to ask that you get the feedback for that one in by February 16th. Then we'll record and get that out to you. The second one is Batman The Dark Knight from the Nolan era. And that one, the feedback deadline is March 2nd. And then we have Flashpoint Paradox, and that's March 16th. So those are the 3 Gotham extras that we're doing with movies. But, Karen, tell them what we're going to do because of the book.
That's right. We both got copies of the book. Mm-hmm. And so Jeff and I are going to read it. Mm-hmm. I should have read it by now, but couldn't. And Jeff hasn't gotten to it either. But we are going to read it in the next couple of days, and we are going to record a podcast with our opinions and our recap and all that sort of thing. We're not going to give any spoilers away, but we will be talking about the book, and it will come out next week.
That's right.
So
that's
look
right.
for that next week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Gotham Dawn of Darkness next week.
That's right.
Awesome sauce. So 4 podcasts in the hiatus for you guys.
Yeah,
look at that.
Definitely.
Don't say we never gave you anything. You get your money's worth here.
Yeah, and I really, once again, I encourage y'all to participate, because with a week-to-week TV show, it's challenging. Everybody has schedules, and you've got things of when you can watch and trying to get in on our feedback deadline. But with this, it's giving you the time to sit down at your leisure and watch the movies, put together your thoughts, put it down, and give us that, because we really want just listening to what you've written in and what you've left on voicemail and what you're thinking is so valuable, and it's so cool to hear everybody's point of view. And so this is really a round table, and your seat's at the table. All you have to do is leave that feedback.
That's right.
We really encourage you to do that. We're really thankful that you've been with us on this journey this season. It's been so fun so far, and we're looking forward to kicking it back off when Gotham returns, but we've got these fun extras in between, and so we're really happy that you're here with us, and we look forward to talking to you next week about the book. So
That's
until
right.
then.
Until Tina. Then, we'll talk to you next week.
That's right.